So starting with the second pada.
Ask the boon that thou mayest desire. Rama said, if, O fathers, ye are favorably disposed towards me, the boon I ask is that I may be absolved from the sins born of my having annihilated the Kshatriyas in anger, and that the lakes I have formed may become famous in the world as holy shrines. The Pitris then said, so shall it be, but be thou pacified. And Ram was pacified accordingly. Right? So that means they were pleased at his endeavor. He did all this to please his ancestors. And they being pleased with him, then they blessed him. And so he wanted that he be freed from any sins that may come from having killed the Kshatriyas, because killing a Kshatriya is not as great as killing a Brahmin, but especially if they're a king, then there is greater sin connected with it. Does that make sense? A general Kshatriya is in a lower standard than a Brahmin. But a king, even though technically he's lower standard because he's protecting so many Brahmins and the whole culture, then killing him is considered a great sin. Right? So then in this way, then there would be it would be improper. Because otherwise, if a Kshatriya behaves badly and the Brahmins chastise him, then that's not seen as a problem. Right? But, like we see is in with, what is his name? The kid.
Sringi.
Then he cursed the emperor, which is even bigger than a king, right? Because the emperor keeps all the kings in line who then protect all the people. So that's a very great sin, because by that so many Brahmins are inconvenienced. So then he had, but then they said, and he wanted these lakes to be sanctified, be seen as holy place, because otherwise these all these Kshatriyas died, then there should be something, some benefit from it, right? So a holy place is created, and they said that that is there, but be pacified. Right? We give you these blessings, but now you be peaceful. Right? Not that you keep on going like this. No, now you be peaceful. Work is done, be satisfied. Right? So, the entire race of Kshatriyas, so we're looking at 21 generations. Right? Like that. So when he says he killed them 21 times over, it means 21 generations. It means you go through the whole Kshatriya race. By that time, the kids have grown up, and now are sitting there, and then you go through and kill them again. And after 21 times, then there were no Kshatriyas, right? It took a while to get rid of them. Like that. The region that lieth near those lakes of gory water, from that time hath been celebrated as Samanta Panchaka, the holy. The wise have declared that every country should be distinguished by a name significant of some circumstance, which may have rendered it famous. In the interval between the Dwapara and Kali Yugas, there happened at Samanta Panchaka the encounter between the armies of the Kauravas and the Pandavas. In that holy region, without ruggedness of any kind, means it was, it's perfectly flat land. Like that. There's some hills around the very outside, but the actual main area is just a huge, huge flat land. In that holy region, without ruggedness of any kind, were assembled 18 Akshauhinis of soldiers eager for battle. And O Brahmanas, having come thereto, they were all slain on the spot, right? Except for 10. Thus the name of that region, O Brahmanas, hath been explained, and the country described to you as a sacred and delightful one. I have mentioned the whole of that whole of what relateth to it as the region is celebrated throughout the three worlds. Right. So he told the circumstances, and he told all the details. Yes.
Maharaj, before you mentioned that the ancestors of Parashuram, they were pleased by the act of Parashuram. So what was the reason that they were pleased?
That will come up later in detail, but basically is Kartavirya Arjuna. he had come and he had killed Parasaram's father and taken the Surabhi cow, because he figured, I'm the emperor, so therefore whatever's the best goes to the emperor. Why this poor little Brahmin should have? Because sometimes the Kshatriyas, even though their position is less than the Brahmins, but because they're almost like Brahmins, they're very, how do you say, reliable, trustworthy, like this. So then, because they act according to Shastra, so then they have basically all the power and influence and wealth that there is. So technically then, as far as practical management, all the wealth and everything belongs to them, the country and everything. And then they distribute that to, you know, Brahmins and whatever needs to be done. But sometimes their training, it means either lack of training or despite their training, they become proud. And once they become proud, then they become a problem, because then they have so much influence that at that time they need to be corrected, right? So if they become a little wild, that's one thing. But if they start to not listen to the Brahmins, or start to bother the Brahmins, then they have to be corrected, right? So then that's the understanding. So they had gotten out of line. They had just gotten to the point where they didn't care for the Brahmins. So this is at the junction between the Satya and the Treta Yugas. Right? So in between, because then it was just they were coming up. Because before that, everyone was Hamsa, so they didn't require, you know, really the whole Varnashram system. It was basically Brahminical culture, that's all. Right? The four Varnas and Brahmins. Like that. Others may be there, but you didn't need the whole culture, right? But at the end of the Satyayuga, then the Kshatriyas become prominent and become, you know, they manage the society. Varnashram is established, right? Yajna is established, because before that was meditation. Yeah. The Rishi said, "We have a desire to know, O son of Suta, what is implied by the term Akshauhini that thou have used, that hath been used by thee. Tell us in full what is the number of horse, foot, chariot, and elephants, which compose an Akshauhini, for thou art fully informed." Right? We've heard this a few times. So now we're going to get exact details. So if anyone is into details, here it comes. Sauti said, "One chariot, one elephant, five foot soldiers, and three horses form one pati." So that's the proportion, right? So that means then before, when he said 10,000 charioteers were killed, that meant 10,000 chariots, 10,000 elephants. That would have been 50,000 foot soldiers and 30,000, you know, horse or cavalry, right? So, you know, he did that in one day. So that's 10, 20, 20, 70. That's a lakh. 100,000. Right? So every day, 100,000, warriors and soldiers were killed by Bhishma. Okay. So that's the proportion. After this, it may get a little bit complicated. Okay. Three of those combinations, three patis, make one Sena Mukha. So in other words, there'd probably be a head of each one of these, right? Three Sena Mukhas are called the Gulma. Three Gulmas, a Gana. Three Ganas, a Vahini. Three Vahinis together are called a Pritana. Three Pritanas form a Chamu. Three Chamus, one Anikini. And Anikini, taking 10 times, forms, as it is styled by those who know, an Akshauhini. Got it?
Yeah.
Okay, the main thing is, you know, is the proportion of, you know, one chariot, one elephant, 5 foot soldiers, and three horses. Because the foot soldiers and the horses, they'll guard the chariot. Because the chariot's the main thing. He can move the quickest, you know, carry the most weapons and all those kind of things. Like that. O ye best of brahmanas, arithmeticians have calculated that the number of chariots... Okay, now you get all added up, okay? That was the proportion. That the number of chariots in an Akshauhini is 21,870. The measure of elephants must be fixed at the same number. O ye pure, you must know that the number of foot soldiers is 109,350. 109,350. The number of horse, means your horse, your cavalry, is 65,610. These, O Brahmanas, as fully explained by me, are the numbers of an Akshauhini, as said by those acquainted with the principles of numbers. O best of Brahmanas, according to this calculation, were composed the 18 Akshauhinis of the Kaurava and Pandava army. Time, whose acts are wonderful, assembled them on that spot, and having made the Kauravas the cause, destroyed them all. Right? So here. Here's an interesting point, just the grammatical. Time, whose acts were assembled them, so time got them together, and the cause was the Kauravas. Right? So they're coming from time and the cause. So the ablative is explained here. Right? Is that the bad behavior of the Kauravas and coming from time, then it was all arranged in this way. Okay. So then time it destroyed them all. Bhishma, acquainted with choice of weapons, fought for 10 days. Okay, now here's how the battle went. There are 18 days of the battle. So this is who is the general of the army. Bhishma, acquainted with the choice of weapons, fought for 10 days. Drona, then he was shot. Drona protected the Kaurava Vahinis for 5 days, so that's 15. Karna, the desolator of hostile armies, fought for 2 days, so now we're 17. And Shalya for half a day. That was it. After that lasted for half a day the encounter with clubs between Duryodhana and Bhima. Right? So after Shalya was killed and that, basically nothing was left. So Duryodhana went in the lake, and then they went and, you know, by insulting him and this and that, then got him to come out of the lake, and for the other half of the day they fought with clubs. At the close of that day, Ashwatthaman and Kripa destroyed the army of Yudhishthir in the night while sleeping without suspicion of danger. Right? Because in the camp, no one attacks the camp. This is the rules. The battle, you fight on the battlefield with soldiers. You don't come into the camp. So you can be peaceful in the camp. There may be spies who will listen to what you see and make your plans. That's there. That's fair. But no one will be attacked or killed in the camp. And so the Pandavas, why they weren't killed is because in the tradition, when you defeat the other army, you sleep in their camp. So that meant the Pandavas and those that survived, means the three on that side, the Pandavas, I forget who was there, what's his name? Kritavarma? No, because Kritavarma is with Ashwatthama.
Satyaki.
And then I think one or two actually escaped, which was rare.
The charioteer.
And I also think, the Yuyudhana, who is the brother of Duryodhana, he, I think, fought for the Pandavas. So he was also with the Pandavas. So those were the only ones. So one escaped, three were attacking the camp, and the other six were then... were in the Kauravas camp, so they didn't get attacked. O Shaunaka, this best of narrations called Bharata, which has begun to be repeated at thy sacrifice, was formerly repeated at the sacrifice of Janamejaya by an intelligent disciple of Vyasa. It is divided into several sections. In the beginning are the Pausya, Puloma, and Astika Parvas, describing in full the valor and renown of kings. It is a work whose description, diction, and sense are varied and wonderful. It contains an account of various manners and rites. It is accepted by the wise as the state called Vairagya. Right? So here, saying the state called Vairagya means you're bringing your line in line with the Vedic literature and following the rules and regulations of the Vedas. So technically speaking, that's Vairagya. Right? Even though your interest may be in fruit of activities, technically because you're doing it in line with the Vedic literatures, it's still in the category of Vairagya. Right? Does that make sense? Then within that general category of Vairagya is the specific category of, or more specific category of those who perform Naishkarmya. Right? They follow the rules and regulations of the Vedic literatures without desiring the result. But that might also be grihasthas or renunciates. Right? Then you have, more specifically then within that group of Vairagya, then those who are, you know, the brahmacharis, brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyas, who are specifically practicing Vairagya. Does that make sense? So this is the various ways that you can take this understanding of Vairagya. So that would mean, technically, if one's not following the Veda, it may have the form of Vairagya, but technically it's not really called Vairagya, because it won't get you out of the material world. Right? While the Vedic is progressive. The only difference between following the Vedic that you stay in the material world and you get out of the material world is whether you want the result of the action that you performed or not. Does that make sense? If you want the result, then you have to stay here to get it. Isn't it? If you don't want the